Welcome to Christian Historical Fiction Talk. I'm your host, author Liz Tolsma. If it's happening in the world of Christian historical fiction, it is happening right here. And what's happening today right here is our interview with Gabriel Meyer, our very long overdue interview with her about her book, In This Moment. It came out in the spring, and somehow she got left off the list of guests that I had coming on. We didn't get her scheduled somehow or another. I don't know how I did that because she's one of my favorites. So we have rectified that now and finally are getting her on the air. So if you are new here, welcome. Thank you so much. Please subscribe to Christian Historical Fiction Talk on your favorite podcasting platform so that you don't miss out on any of these great authors, even though I might miss out on scheduling them. I promise to have on as many as I possibly can. We fit as many as we can into a year on just about every week, so you don't want to miss out on that. Also, join us over on social media on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or X, whatever it's called now, and Pinterest. We are there on all of those platforms. It's a great way to stay in touch, to know when new episodes release, and also to have some conversations about some great books. And if you are returning, thank you so much. Glad to have you back with us. I'm sure you enjoyed Gabriel the first time. I know you'll enjoy her this time. I'm so glad to have you along with us again. Take a minute and go over to liztolsma.com. Check out my Patreon over there and see in what way you might be able to support Christian Historical Fiction Talk and get yourself some great benefits as well. Okay. That's it. We got through all of that. And now I am so pleased to turn our attention to Gabriel Meyer, here to talk about her latest release, In This Moment. Welcome to the show, Gabriel. It is so good to have you back with us today.
Thank you. I love being back here.
I read In This Moment quite a while ago. It's been out for a bit. And all of a sudden I realized, wait a minute, Gabriel isn't on the schedule. How in the world did I let that happen? And so even though it's a little bit late, I had to have you on. I had to have you come talk about In This Moment because it's right up there with my favorite books of the year, if not the favorite book of the year so far for me. So better late than never. We're glad to have you finally.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate that.
So you were here last year when the first book came out, but for listeners who maybe didn't catch that one or need a little reminder, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. As you said, my name is Gabriel Meyer. I am the author of When the Day Comes and In This Moment. It's book one and two in the Timeless series. Last year, When the Day Comes released in May of 2022, and then In This Moment released May of 2023. And book three is releasing next May in 2024. So the basic premise of the series is it's about a family who is born with a special gift. They are time crossers. So book one is about Libby, and she lives in 1774 Colonial Williamsburg. When she goes to sleep there, she wakes up in 1914 New York City. When she goes to sleep there, she's back in Williamsburg, and no time passes while she's gone. And on her 21st birthday, she has to choose which of those lives to keep and which to forfeit. So not an easy decision to make. And then book two is about her daughter, Maggie. And for reasons that I will not spoil in case you haven't read book one, Maggie has three timelines. And so Maggie lives in 1861, 1941, and 2001, mostly in Washington, D.C., but the book does move around a little bit. And again, Maggie has to choose by her 21st birthday which of those lives she wants to keep and which one she'll forfeit. And lots of twists and turns in the book. I've talked with a lot of people who've read both of them, and they've said that they're very hard to predict. So that was what I was going for. So that's kind of in a nutshell what the books are about.
Yes, I love the twists and turns of it. Now that I'm done reading the whole book, I was saying offline that for about 5 minutes, I really hated you for one of the twists that you threw into this one. And I was just screaming at you like, why? But I get it now. And I figured out why it had to be that way. But I was not happy with you for a while, but I love it. The unpredictability, the uniqueness of it just makes it very memorable and just makes me fall in love with it. You've really taken a new, I guess you could call it a subgenre, and really made it something that can appeal to a lot of people, because I never thought I would love time-crossing novels. Between you and Jody Headland, you have made me fall in love with time-crossing novels. So thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, I think that they do fall under the time travel genre, as you said, but specifically in my series, because it's a little bit different. Usually with time travel, somebody kind of falls through a portal of time, and then they're stuck in a different era and they're trying to get back to their original life. And then maybe they fall in love or they have to help win a war or something. And I was thinking about that one day, and I was thinking, what happened if somebody was born with two lives? You know, just the kind of idea popped into my head. And that was kind of where mine was born from, or the idea sprang from. And so it is a little bit different than your general time travel books because of that. And that's why I call it time crossing, because she's not really traveling through time as much as she's crossing back and forth.
Yeah. And so you mentioned the first book had two timelines, 1774 and 1914. And In This Moment has three, 1861, 1941, and 2001. Why did you go for three this time?
Just to give myself more work. I don't know. There was a time when I was writing it that I thought, why did I do this? You know, a part of it is that I want each of these books to stand apart. And I, you know, that's the thing that I've been hearing from a lot of readers is, you know, they read the first one, they loved it, but they were like, is the second one just going to be kind of a retelling or a rehashing of the same plot ideas? And I didn't want that. So the second book has the same elements of time crossing, and I hope all of the things that people love, which is, you know, rich history, good characters, but I wanted it to have a different edge to it. And so that was part of the reason I chose three timelines, just to kind of give it something different to stand apart. And I don't want to give away too much about the third book, but when you got to the end of book two, you were introduced to the main characters for book three. And I wanted that to be a different experience as well. So each book has something unique about it. That's partially why I chose the three time periods. But the other is just, I love history. And the more history I can get in there, the better.
And that's the neat thing with the three different timelines and the time crossing, is you can cram a lot of history into it, which you did with 1861, 1941, and 2001. Anybody who has any inkling about history knows that those are three very pivotal moments in U.S. history. Mm-hmm. Did you choose these purposely so that your character Maggie would have to grapple with moral dilemmas like Pearl Harbor? I was thinking also times of war. Mm-hmm. Or why did you come up with those three times, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Sure. So ever since I was younger, and I loved studying history, like as a little kid, I loved the Civil War era. And so as I looked at history, I was always fascinated by the fact that World War II was 1941 to 1945. The American Civil War was 1861 to 1865. And the similarities in those years just always kind of fascinated me. But then on September 11th, 2001, I remember the day it happened, and I was like, this is a one. You know, I thought another big war was starting, and I thought, this is starting on a one year. And I'm not a numerologist, I'm not big into numbers, but that just always fascinated me. And so when I had the idea to set it in three timelines, I instantly, like, there was no question. I was like, those are the three that I'm choosing. And it was really interesting as I kind of delved deeper into the story, the similarities. You know, there's nothing new under the sun, but there, you know, there's nuances of each war that are different. But the general idea that, you know, that evil exists and that why do we have to continually fight these wars is something that Maggie grapples with too. But I also knew I wanted her to be a healer. And so it was kind of fun to see how one person might be able to use that same gift in three different timelines. So in 2001, she's a medical student. In 1941, she's a Navy nurse. And then in 1861, she has that same passion to serve, but not the same ability because she is a woman, but she is also looking forward to serving during the Civil War. She knows that she'll be able to help. And so she actually kind of stalks Clara Barton, who started up the American Red Cross later on in the 1880s. But in the 1860s is when Clara Barton really started to get involved. So I just, those three timelines just made sense to me.
Yeah, I didn't even realize the thing about the ones until I saw them in your book, and I'm like, wow, that's right. They all, 1861, 1941, 2001, all ended with a one. So that was something that had never really clicked with me before. So that was very interesting to just have that brought to my attention. Okay, so I don't know if you can answer this question without giving any spoilers. So it's okay if you tell me. I can't say without giving away any spoilers. How did you choose which timeline Maggie was going to stay in?
That does give a little bit of a spoiler away, but I knew, okay, so when I plotted out the three books before I gave my proposal to my publisher, which is Bethany House, I needed to have an idea as to what each book would be about. So I sat down and I figured out, you know, for the first book, I knew which era Libby would end up in. And so then I thought, okay, where can I go from there? That would be roughly 20 years later. And then when I sat down with book two, I thought, okay, what do I want book three? Where do I want that one to go? So then I had to kind of determine which era Maggie would choose based on what I needed to happen for book three. So it is, I won't give away more than that, but right. That was part of the reason. And I do have to say that in book two, even though I knew who the hero was going to be, there are really three heroes in that book. All of them are worthy of Maggie, but there was one of them that I kept needing to put back in his place. I'm like, no, she's not going to choose you. You need to stay in your place. And so I don't usually struggle with characters. You know, they usually do what I tell them to do, but that particular gentleman just got a little bit more romantic minded than I had intended. So, you know, it was fun to create three very different heroes and set them in three very different times for her to choose from. But ultimately, trying to figure out which one needed to be the right one for her so that the reader walks away happy with the choice she made as well. So it was a struggle.
I'm sure I can imagine that it must have been. And we talked a little bit about the twists and the turns and everything that goes on in these books. Do you plan them? It sounds like they are at least somewhat planned. And you keep topping them just when I think, like, okay, she couldn't deliver a bigger twist. There comes a bigger twist. How do you manage all that?
You know, I wish I could say I was brilliant, but I'm really not. Sometimes this idea just falls out of thin air and I'm like, okay, that had to be a gift from God because I did not know what I was going to do here. I'm a master plotter. I really, for me, it's kind of like, and I've explained this in a couple of different ways, but I think that the best way to describe it is if you were going to build a house, you would need to know where the electricity was going to go, where the plumbing was going to go, where all of your walls were going to go. And so you need to have that structure in mind. And then once you get your walls up and you get everything else in place, then you get to have fun and you get to decorate and paint and put your furniture in. So my plotting is kind of like the structure of a home. You know, I know how the story is going to play out. I know all of the major pieces, the twists, the turns. And then when I sit down to actually write it, that's when I get to kind of decorate it and figure out what I want it to look like. But I need to have that structure in place before I can sit down, or else I think I would freeze. Like, I don't know, especially with a series like this one where one piggybacks off the other. It's, you know, each story is a complete story, but it segues into the next one. And so I needed to know that before I sat down to write them.
Sure. And that's so funny that you would use that analogy, because that is the same analogy that I use to describe writing a book, like your first draft is your structure and everything like that. And then as we go through and edit it, you paint it, you decorate it, you move in the furniture. Same thing. So I think that's a fantastic analogy of how it goes.
Yeah.
So Maggie, even though she is referred to as three different versions of that name throughout the book, just as sort, I liked that. It helped me keep track of which timeline we were in. You keep her as Maggie. She's still the same person, but you adapt her to the three different times. She's different in some ways too. So how did you go about keeping her Maggie when she's living these three different lives?
So what you're referencing, for those who might not have read it, is her name is Margaret in each timeline, but in one she goes by Margaret in 1861, and in 1941 she goes by Maggie, and then 2001 she goes by Meg. But at her heart, she identifies as Maggie. That's just who she is. And partially because 1941 is where her time crossing mother is, and she was the one that gave her the name Maggie. And so I think this applies to any historical novel that I write, and that I think any historical author writes too, is that we are writing a story for a modern reader. So there are expectations from that modern reader. But at the same time, we're trying to put a character into a time period that they had different ideas. There was different cultures there, you know, all sorts of things. And so we have to be aware of that, that the character has to appear as if they are from that era. This is a little bit different in that she lives in three very different time periods. And so my job then was to find out, like, how would a woman in 1861 deal with the culture around her? Of course, we've got the American Civil War. We've got all of the political issues going on. And I read a lot of books, nonfiction books about that era to kind of help me understand, you know, the political thoughts and feelings, social issues that were going on. And then again in 1941, you know, there's so many things going on, and she needs to be the same core person with the same core values, but yet she does need to interact with her environment a little bit differently for each era. So again, that was a challenge, and it was just sitting down. I write my book from beginning to end in chronological order. So I don't like just write the 1860s first and then the 1940s. It was day one, I sat down, wrote the first scene in 1861. Day two, I wrote 1941. Day three, 2001. So I just completely focus on that day and what's happening for her in that world, and just kind of how she interacts with, you know, the other characters, or, you know, things that are going on in her world, and just being really purposeful about how she responds. So I don't know if that answers your question, because it's a tough, that's probably the toughest part about writing a historical novel. You know, I didn't live in 1861. I don't know what it would have been like. I can make my best guess. And I never want to do anything to insult or minimalize the experiences that people had in those time periods. Even if I can't understand it, or if I don't agree with certain things that happened, I still have to know that the people who lived then, you know, they were doing the best that they could with what they had.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Ashley T. Lee Podcast. Join me to hear the Bible read line by line and clearly explained. Listen to the Word of God in your car or home or work while it transforms your mind daily. Romans 12:2 says, "Don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, which is good and acceptable and perfect." Knowing the Bible can give you peace and joy in this hectic world. Listen weekly to Ashley T. Lee Podcast on all podcast sites.
So in 1861, Maggie has knowledge of the future, and that's a dilemma for her, especially with her medical care and things like that. And the same thing in 1941. But in 2001, she doesn't have any future knowledge because she hasn't lived any longer than 2001. And so you as the author and we as the readers are the ones who have the knowledge that she doesn't have. Did you find yourself wishing that you could tell her something as you were writing the 2001 timeline?
Actually, no. And, you know, that was the more interesting one to write because I lived through 2001 and, you know, I know what it felt like to be experiencing that as it was happening. So that was actually kind of fun for me to relate with Maggie in that era because, like, I was there. I, you know, not in Washington, D.C., but I remember it so crystal clear what happened that day. So I think that that's been one of the things that a lot of readers have resonated with is they kind of love that they're on the in with Maggie in 1861 and 1941. Like, you know, the reader and Maggie both know what's going to happen. But then in 2001, the reader knows what's going to happen, but Maggie doesn't. So they kind of feel like time crossers themselves. Some of them have told me, like, I kind of know what Maggie might be feeling in the other eras because I know what's going to happen in 2001. So that was a lot of fun to explore as a writer. And I hope as a reader as well, it's kind of a interesting take on, you know, historical. It's also strange to think that 2001 is kind of a historical timeline now. I actually had to do some research and be like, what kind of phones did we have in 2001? And, like, you know, I know the internet was obviously a thing, but, like, how much were we using it? You know, it's just funny. Like,
yeah. Yeah, that was going to be my next thing I was going to say. It's just bizarre to think of it as historical because to you and I, and probably to many of the listeners, it's as crystal clear as if it happened yesterday. I could tell you everything about that day, just about everything about that day. And my son was in first grade, so he has some hazy memories of it. But my daughter was just not even 2 years old yet. And so she has no idea. She doesn't remember it at all. And that just is wild to me. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And now that it's like in a quote unquote historical novel, it's like, oh man, do I feel old, really old.
Well, and it's not an era that a lot of people have written about yet. And so I think that that's been interesting for readers too, to be like, oh wow, there's a book about this thing I lived through. And it's also helped a lot of people to identify more with Maggie in 1861 and 1941. You know, we look back at these things in history and they just are like for your daughter, it's something that we learn about, but we didn't live through, so we can't really relate. But I think that hopefully, you know, for readers who are reading this and they can relate to 2001, that hopefully they can kind of then understand a little bit deeper what it might have been like for people who are actually living through the Civil War and World War II. So hopefully.
Yeah, for sure. You live on the banks of the Mississippi River, which I think is really cool. Mm-hmm. And you say it's really inspiring. So how does living on a river inspire you?
I am actually looking at it right now. I grew up on the same river for a bit in my childhood. We actually lived in a house on the river. And one of the things that I love, especially about the river where we live, is that my town started because of this river. And there's only 4 natural waterfalls on the entire length of the Mississippi, and one of them is in my hometown. And so very early in Minnesota history, at about the same time that Minneapolis and Stillwater were developing, my town started. So I look at the different things that happened in my town because of the river, the different industries, the different just events, the Native Americans, the fur traders, all of that. And I look at a history as kind of like a timeline. I look at the river as a timeline in history where right now, as I look at it, I can't see any of that, anything that happened on the river. But if I look back in the history books, I can see it. And so that inspires me, just life in general. You know, you go to Boston and it's just Boston, but it has such a rich history. And so that's why it inspires me. Every time I look at it, I think about all of the things that have happened on the river. And now it's just kind of placid and it's actually really low right now. We haven't had much rain this year, but I love it. It's such an inspiration for me to look at it and think about history and how one thing like the river can impact generations.
Wow, I love that. And it's beautiful out there where you live along the Mississippi. We've gone camping there and whatnot. And it's just, it's so beautiful, the bluffs and all that. And I love how you tie it into history. That's really cool. You mentioned a third book that's coming out in May of 2024. Can you just give us a little hint as to what that one is about?
Sure. I hesitate to say too much because at the end of book two, you will meet the characters who are in book three. And so, and again, I don't want to give away too much because I don't want you to know which timeline. But I can say that one of the timelines that will take place in book three that does not have anything to do with Maggie's Choice is actually set in 1692 in Salem, Massachusetts during the Salem witch trials. And so that was wild. Like, I've done a lot of research about a lot of things, but that to me is the most intense thing I've ever researched. And one of the reasons why I've been really fascinated by the Salem witch trials most of my life is I actually have ancestors who are on both sides, the Putnam family and the Proctor family. So the accusers and the accused. And so it was really interesting to actually put them in the book too and know that I came from both of those families. So that was, I would say, fun, but it really wasn't fun. I mean, it's such a fascinating time period. And I think that there's this resurgence of people being interested in the witch trials. But unfortunately, I think a lot of people explore the darker side of it. And I never, ever once in my book call any of the accused witches because they weren't. And so it was fun to kind of see perhaps what really happened there. And I have my own theory, and I kind of, my characters kind of share that theory in the book, but I don't know if we'll ever really know exactly what happened.
Right. Oh, well, how interesting that you get to sort of put in your own family history into that. That must be a lot of fun to do.
Yeah, it was.
So in the meantime, while you are keeping us hanging off the cliff with book two and we await May, which seems like so far away, how can readers keep in touch with you so they can remember when that next one releases, can get it pre-ordered, things like that?
Sure. So you can go to my website, which is GabrielleMeyer.com, and you can sign up for my newsletter. I also have a list of all of my books there. I think I have 37 books published now. So yeah, it's a lot and lots of different genres. But I also am on Facebook and Instagram more than I should be. So I share all of that, you know, covers or pre-orders or giveaways on my social media. And I love connecting with readers. It's probably my favorite part of being an author.
Well, thank you so much, Gabriel, for taking time out of your summer to come and join us. I'm so glad that we got this to finally work out. And I am so sorry for my oversight this spring and not having you on then. But I'm glad we were able to get you on. And it's been a wonderful chat. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, what a lovely visit that was with Gabriel Meyer. So glad that we were able to make it work and to have her on the show with us this week. I honestly cannot wait for book three. If you haven't read either the first book or the second book, and you don't have to read the first one to read the second one, but I highly encourage both of them. In This Moment has to be right up there with my favorite books of 2023, at least so far. It is absolutely stellar, and you're going to love it. And I think I'm going to go back and reread it when I have a spare moment and refresh my memory before I read the third one. It was so good. If you'd like more information about In This Moment or a link to order your copy of it, or if you'd like to learn more about Gabriel and a link to her website where you can sign up for her newsletter and keep in touch with her, then head over to my website, liztolsma.com. All that information is there in the show notes, either right on the front page or under the podcast tab. And if you are new or newer and you want to catch up on some of these episodes, then everything, all of the episodes are listed there under the podcast tab. That's a great thing to do while you're out enjoying these last days of summer. Next week, we have a new author or a new-to-us author, I should say, a first-timer here on Christian Historical Fiction Talk. I love bringing you return guests like Gabriel, but I also love introducing you to other authors that I haven't had on before. So I try to mix it up as much as I possibly can. And so we have Johanna Rojas Van, who is going to be here next week. And she is going to be talking about her book, An American Immigrant. Oh, what a good book. Fantastic read. This is an author that you are going to want to be sure to check out. She was recommended to me by my virtual assistant, Sherry Johnson, and I know that you are going to really enjoy it. I trust Sherry so much, and she did not fail me with Johanna. So please come back next week. Learn a little bit more about Johanna. Read An American Immigrant if you get a chance before then. But check us out next week. Thank you so much for taking time out of a busy summer day. I know you've got a lot going on, a lot to try to squeeze in if school hasn't started yet again for you, for wherever you are. So I thank you for taking the time to listen and to share the podcast with others who share the same love of Christian historical fiction as you do. I appreciate it so much. I hope you have a wonderful week, and we will see you next time.